Today, you'll learn why you can't fix trauma for your child, but you can help them hold it safely. We cover parent nervous system regulation, what kids need developmentally, and communication that actually works with youngsters and teens. So stay to the end to learn five things that you can start this week. And if this helps you, follow the advisor with Stacey Chalemi on Apple, Spotify. Subscribe to our YouTube at Stacey Chalemi Advisor and drop a five-star review so more families find it. Now, my guest, I was very excited today. She is Sam Straub, a parent coach and clinician of helping families build safety, connection, and trust. Samantha, I'm so excited to have you on the show today. It is just a great pleasure and honor to have you here. You know, tell me a little about yourself, and I can't wait to jump in because I have so many questions to ask you.
You got it. Nice to talk with you. Thank you for having me, Stacey. As Stacey mentioned, my name is Sam Straub, and I am a parent coach. My business is called Teen Savvy Coaching. So I help parents of teens and tweens calm chaos, increase communication, all while staying connected to your teen during a time of their independence seeking. And on the side, I'm also a therapist and a longtime former educator.
I love it. I love it. Now, you say parents can't fix trauma, but we can help our kids hold it safely. What does holding actually mean and look like at home?
What I mean by that is, I mean, we might have to dissect a little bit what trauma is and what it does to the body, and because it's kind of a, this part of it. But trauma is when something happens that overwhelms a person's ability to cope at that moment. Fight or flight takes place. They can't fight or flee. Their nervous system continues to activate, and they cannot, they can't fix the problem. And these can be a single event or it can be a series of events over time that like do that to a person on the regular. And if you are a parent and you've got a kid who has been through something traumatic for them, that hurts us, right? Like, because our hearts walk around inside of our children. Our kids don't know that, but that's what happens. And so that's what is vulnerable to be a parent. And our instinct is it's to protect our children. And so if something has happened that hurt them, first of all, we may feel inside like we failed to protect them. And even if we don't feel like that, we may feel like it is our obligation to heal them, right? We want them whole and complete. And there are things we can do to make healing more possible, but we can't heal for our children. And so what I mean by we can hold, we can hold space for them, we can make a holding container for them is we can be in relationship with them. And there are ways to do that effectively. And as your kids hit adolescence, it's harder because they become more prickly and they've got a whole lot going on inside of themselves. So yeah, if you've had something big, if your child has had something big and overwhelming happen to them, that's what I mean by we can help them hold it. We can be in relationship with them. We can interact with them in ways that are safety promoting. We can get them supports that they deserve and need. And then the healing's up to them. And that's hard. That's hard, hard, hard to watch your innocent child go through something big that they didn't deserve.
Exactly. No, it's the one of the hardest things, to watch your child go through something and you're powerless. All you could do is comfort them, give them the support, the love they need. But sometimes they have to go through these things, and it's very hard to sit on the sideline because you'd rather take the pain for your child
That's
than
right.
your child, have to go through anything in life.
Right. So much of parenting is distress management. And I don't mean managing the distress of our children, but that's part of it too. I mean managing our own distress. Because to raise independent people, it's this series of small goodbyes, right? These series of small, and that doesn't mean that the kids is like flying the coop and never going to be part of your life. But, literally as a mom, I mean, I have two children and I carried them both. And I recognize there's lots of ways to be a mom, but humans are, they come into this world by connected to their parent, right? And so we're hardwired for that. We want, we like we have biology in us And you know, the psychology word for that is attachment, but we want to attach adults to their kids usually, but kids definitely to their adults for survival reasons. And it is when you're attached to someone who's hurting, that hurts us. And whether that means, you know, you're attached as a child to a parent who brings hurt into the house, into the relationship, you know, it might maybe hurt that the kid didn't cause, but the parents c carrying their own stuff, or in the case of trauma for a child, you're watching your child go through pain and you don't know how to solve it. That's so much distress management for that.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And why does parent regulation matter so much? What changes when the adult is steady?
So, first of all, nervous systems are contagious for people that we are in relationship with. So, like if I go to check out at the supermarket and I can see that that person's having a bad day, and if I'm a really empathetic person, that bad day feeling I might find that contagious. But generally speaking, I don't have a real relationship with the supermarket checkout person, so I'm not going to catch that. But if you're in the vicinity of someone you love and care about, and they have some sort of emotional cloud over their head, you know, you feel that. There isn't language for it. You don't need language, but you sense it. And I know, like Stacey, you know what I'm talking about, right? When you were younger, you could go into your household and you're like, I know what kind of mood my parents are in or my parents in just by vibe alone, you know? Okay, so we humans have that kind of non-lingual way of connecting, and that happens pre-language, like it happens before birth, right? So how our nervous system is contagious for our children, whether we like it or not. And we can use that for their benefit. So if we can learn to be in harmony, you know, nervous system harmony, and not react, stay steady, stay calm, it gives our kids permission to explore their emotions, be authentic, feel off balance, and then right the ship, right? Because they're not also dealing with whatever stuff's going on inside of us. That's a privilege, you know, that's a gift that it's possible to give our children, but it's hard.
It is hard. It is so hard. Now, you shared that this work is personal for you. What did your own story teach you about safety and repair?
I grew up in a household where I knew I was loved, absolutely knew I was loved. My parents were, you know, in my corner. And my mom brought, I think, a fair amount of pain from her own childhood. And I didn't know this growing up. I learned it, you know, once I became an adult. A fair amount of pain from her own childhood into her marriage and to being a mom. So I call people like my mom, like buckets with a hole at the bottom. Like sometimes they could be filled, but there was always a slow leak. And depending on where she was in terms of her own bucket being filled, that was the mom that I got. And sometimes I would get this full mom who was vibrant and fun to be around. And that's usually the mom who also went public. And then behind the scenes, sometimes I would, you know, fail a test I didn't know I was taking. You know, I would do something wrong and she would be like purse her lips or be exasperated with me. So I buttoned up. Like I just kept feelings to myself. I was a high achiever and you could get by with that, right? And so I didn't really learn how to be authentic with my feelings until I was an adult. In fact, I was spooked by authenticity. But I like people a lot. You know, and I'm an extrovert. So I think I went into education right out of college. I became a teacher, and I knew since I was in high school that I wanted to be a teacher, because I wanted to connect. I wanted to guide. I wanted to be with other people, you know, in a meaningful, impactful way. And then a year into being a teacher, I started going back to grad school for counseling. Because I was like, this is the part of teaching I like, the affective part, the people to people, the person to person part. And I think I was healing my own, you know what? You know, like I couldn't have told you that at the time, but I certainly know that now.
Right. No, I know. I went to college. I took a class on psychology. They said, if you're here to solve your own problems, then get up and leave. If you're serious about this profession, then stay. Three fourths of the class left and the quarter stayed. So that's a very common thing.
It is a common thing, you know, I'm now, like I said, I'm a parent coach, but a couple days a week I'm a therapist. So sometimes like my teen therapy clients will come in and they'll be like, I'm taking a psychology class. I think I and they're diagnosing themselves. It's like med students who like have every disease that they learn about, right? Like that's what
Yeah,
happens when you
Now, for parents who feel overwhelmed today, what's your first 24-hour step to starting differently?
the One of the things that I teach parents is, again, I work primarily with parents of adolescents, and there's
Right.
a qualitatively different way that adolescents operate in this world
Yeah.
than children and adults. Like their brains are qualitatively different. So
Yes.
the first thing that I suggest, and again, this is something I teach, is learn about the adolescent mind.
Right.
Learn, that's the first course in my parent pathway. Like learn about the adolescent mind so that you understand when your child's behavior is a can't and when it's a won't.
Yeah.
Because oftentimes we think our children are being willful. We think they're being, like if you can take your show on the road, how come you can't show up at home? Or if you're like
Right.
this in one setting, how come you're like so different in this other setting? So something parents can do today is learn about the adolescent mind. That's like my, I really wish that that was mandatory education for every parent of an adolescent.
Yeah, I do too, actually. Now, developmental basics, like what's the difference about a younger child versus a teen when they hit stress?
Teenagers' brains are, they get an upgrade during adolescence, and their back of their upgrade, their brain upgrades before the front, and in the back is where the stress response happens and the emotional, emotional reactions happen. And the front of the brain is where regulatory skills and executive functions and all the things we need to do adulting happen. So not only do you have this like hyper, this like extremely well developed stress response part of the brain, the amygdala and surrounding areas, you have a braking system that is totally outmatched by that emotional part of the brain. So teenagers, when they have a stress response, it looks bigger because it is bigger. Their brain has just gotten hypersensitive to emotion. So if they have an emotion, they feel it bigger. And they have fewer tools to rein it in than adults do. And so teenagers feel things more substantially than younger kids do. And teenagers have fewer tools than adults do to rein their feelings back or to like do make good decisions when they're having a feeling. So, and this happens many times a day. So that's a huge qualitative difference. There's lots of subtleties to it, but that's a summary.
I love that. Now, when a teen looks defiant, what might actually be happening in the brain and the body?
Well, defiant behavior, all behaviors have a reason. They've got a need. Behavior just is the outward expression of a need or a desire or a wish. So if you think like if someone's being defiant, what's going on in their body or in their environment that feels unsatisfying to them? And sometimes as parents, we will say, well, that's dumb that they're unsatisfied by something. What do they have to be unsatisfied by? But that's what's happening. Kids do well when they can. I'm not the first person to say that, and I won't be the last person, but kids do well when they can. So if they're being defiant, something is happening. Either they don't have the skills internally to manage the moment, or something's going on externally that's agitating them, and they're letting someone know that.
You know, that's, go ahead.
Yeah, that's it. It's a skill, internal skills thing, or an ex, or a feelings thing in reaction to something environmental.
You see that all the time. And I think sometimes parents are a little too hard on their children. You know, they have to really step back and understand they're going through something. And what you might not think is a big deal in their eyes is a big deal. Everybody takes things differently, you know, and sometimes I think people think that everyone takes things the way they do, you know, and they don't realize that We all come from different walks of life. The children are going through things, and certain things that we've kind of outgrown. They're going through it right now, and it can mean the end of the world to them, and it could be like, for a parent,
Oftentimes, things that bug a teenager should bug a teenager. I'm thrilled when teenagers get upset about things that, as an adult, you would just let it slide off your back because that's appropriate for a kid. You're supposed to be upset over kid things, right? And when you get to be an adult, you're supposed to be like, okay, I can manage that. Now I'm upset over adult things, you know?
For sure. Now, give us a simple talk framework that works in the heat of the moment, like step by step, notice it, like I'm taking a slow breath, like notice your name and your state of mind, and then taking a slow breath.
Okay, so I have a tool, and this is free. You can download this from my website. I call it How to Have a You Screwed Up Conversation, but it should be called How to Have a Sensitive Conversation with Your Teenager. And it's in it, I outline something I call my LOVED framework, LOVED, and each letter stands for a different step. So I guess I would begin to answer your question by saying, before you use the LOVED framework, take your deep breath, regulate yourself, do what you need to come in steady and not hot. Okay. But L stands for label for good. So if your kid's dysregulated, sometimes we label kids as a pain in the neck, or we just say, like, you're really out of sorts, or you're re like, instead, put a label on them that you want them to live up to. And that might sound something like, listen, this must feel so out of control for you. I know that this isn't how you prefer to be. This isn't how you usually are. So there, I'm labeling the kid as someone who prefers to be, but better regulated and who generally is. So that's an example of labeling for good. O is ask open-ended questions. And these are not cross-examination questions. These are questions with like genuine curiosity. Like, tell me more about what happened today, or tell me more about what you're feeling in your body, or if I had gone through your day today, what would have made me feel like you do right now? Right? The open-ended questions. And then sometimes your kid's gonna say something and you're gonna when you ask those questions and you're gonna think they are really blowing something out of proportion, or they don't see something accurate. And that's probably true because they're teenagers. And before you go there, that's E. V is validate. So you have to believe their reality, even if you don't think their reality is accurate. So you have to say, I get why you'd feel like that. If I were in your shoes, that makes sense to me. Or so let me see if I understand what you've just said. Is that how it feels to you? Is that how you see it? You must. I say this like my analogy is sometimes it feels like your kid is in a mud puddle and they're like, but I'm in a mud puddle. And you're like, yeah, come on out. Get out of the mud puddle. Just get out. I have a towel over here. And they're like, you don't understand how muddy it is in here. And they're like, I said, get out of the mud puddle. Here's the towel. And then you get into a fight. But instead, what your kid needs is you need to go sit in the mud puddle with them. And go, boy, it is muddy in here. I see why you don't like it. And we don't want to get in the mud like that with our kid because it feels like we're endorsing the temper tantrum or the mud puddle moment. But when you get in there and you're like, it's muddy, and they're like, you see how muddy it is? You see how bad this is in here? And at that point, you'd be like, I left a towel over there on the edge of the puddle. Should we go get it together? And they're much more likely to be like, yeah, let's go get it together. Right. That's what validating is, sitting in the mud puddle with your kid when you probably don't want to and it feels like a bad idea, but that's what they need. But if you stop at validating, then you leave them in a potentially dysregulated state, or you are, if they don't see something accurately, you're not teaching them anything. So E is where you do your teaching, and that's where you express concern. And that's where you say, I'm curious about, like, this doesn't make sense to me, or I'm feeling a little nervous about what's happening right now because I see this going down a bad path. Or you express concerns and you use a feeling word, you know, your own feeling. And then D is demonstrate confidence that things can get better. I know we can get through this, or I've seen you handle hard stuff like this in the past. I'm here for you, but I know we can manage this together, right?
I
So
love that.
The loved framework works for a myriad of ills.
Yeah.
If you can download, my website is teensavvycoaching.com. So if you hear this and you're like, oh, I want more, I want to hear that again, it's a
Oh,
free video guide and you can get it right on the front page of my website.
I love that. Now, what phrases should parents retire and what should they say instead?
Okay, I think parents should retire the word but and they should say and. And here's what I mean by that. Sometimes we'll say things like around a tricky situation. I was just doing a podcast recording earlier this like month on substance use, teens and substance use.
Yes.
And this is an example of where the word and should come in play instead of but. Instead of saying, I know you want to hang with your friends, but there's going to be whatever there's going to be at that party, some sort of risk.
Yeah.
Say, I know you want to hang out with your friends, and we endorse you being with your friends. We want you to have a good friend circle. And we're worried about the fact that there are substances at the party. We're
Right.
not cool with underage substances, substance use. And we know kids your age do that. You know, we know kids your age do this, and we don't want you to make that choice. Like, use and put pressure instead of having one thing negate the other. Like, let's make it as complicated as it actually is to be a kid. Let's just
Right.
eliminate the word but and use and instead, because we all know the word but makes us negate the first half of the sentence anyhow.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. Now, how do we set firm boundaries while staying warm and connected with our child?
The thing that boundaries do for our kids is they help them, first of all, they help internalize decision-making skills for the future, and they help the kids internalize a value system for the future. So when you are setting boundaries, oftentimes we think like this is nobody breaks it down like this in their heads, but if a kid
Yeah.
does something wrong, internally we might think, well, what level of inconvenience or wrongness was that? I'm going to
Yes.
punish my kid with an equal and opposite amount of inconvenience or wrongness for them.
Yeah.
So they caused distress in our household. I'm going to cause them distress by taking their phone or grounding them or whatever. And really, what that teaches is I'm in charge.
Right.
You screw up, I make your life hard, right? That's what that teaches. And that creates disconnection. That's coming from, that's using power over.
Right.
But as a parent, you want to use your power too. Power to teach, power to guide, power to facilitate, right?
Yes.
So instead of thinking about consequences like punishment, think about them like teaching. And the things you should be, unless it's a safety matter, then of course that needs to be handled in a different way. But the two things that are worth teaching are values and skills. So when your kid screws up and you need to set a boundary,
Right.
or preemptively, if you're setting a boundary to prevent a screw up, explain it to your child in a way that emphasizes what skills you're promoting or what values that boundary is enforcing.
Yes.
Because then the child knows your reasoning for the boundary, and they're much less likely to they might push back on it anyway. And under
Right.
various circumstances, they might violate it anyway. But at
Right.
least it doesn't feel arbitrary to them. And
Yes.
they know that you're in their corner because values and skills are theirs. Like you're giving them good things for the future. You're stocking their toolkit for future adulting.
Yes, that's a great answer. I love that. Now, with co-regulation in real life, what are the three quick resets that a calm and in the calm nervous system?
I would say you can, if your exhales are longer than your inhales, that will calm your nervous system.
Okay.
If you move your butt is one of them, honestly, it's a quick reset.
Yeah.
Because when we have a stress response, like blood and oxygen rush to our running away muscles so that we can flee. So if
Okay.
you use your butt muscles, if you go for a walk or you walk up and down some stairs, it metabolizes a little bit of the stress response and it teaches your body, okay, we're done, being afraid of that threat. And then our brain doesn't know if the threat is a beast coming at us or we have to have a hard conversation with our kid. The brain doesn't
Yeah.
know. It's preparing us either way. So long, slow exhales, move your butt. And there's a bunch of other ones, but I would say another good one is like collect your thoughts if you can. So do some, and writing is a good way to do that, but it doesn't work for everybody. So if your thoughts are jumbled, honestly, sometimes writing them down just jumbles them more. So do something that's a high cognitive load with your thoughts. Like,
I
and that
like
could
that.
be like when I was a school counselor and kids would come into my office dysregulated, but parents get dysregulated all the time, I would give them a sheet of paper and it had the letters of the alphabet down the left side. And I would pick a category and I would say, write a girl's name for every letter on this page, or
Oh,
write a food, or because it ha made them think and they
think.
had to divert mental energy away from feeling towards doing something where they were using no emotions, just recalling things. So that's another thing. Like if you can't move your butt, you can always breathe. That's available to you all the time. But like doing something to cognitively divert some of your brain capacity elsewhere temporarily.
I like that. Now, when we blow it because we all will, how do we fix it fast?
I'm sorry. Kids do not need perfect parents. They need authentic parents, and we do blow it. We all blow it, right? So when you can go to your child and say, "Hey, you know what I was trying to do? This. This is what I was hoping to teach you. But here's what happened instead, and I overstepped, or I understepped, or I didn't acknowledge whatever it is." If you can do that, first of all, what does it teach your child for how to be in future relationships with significant people outside of your household? It teaches them what to expect when someone has violated a boundary of theirs, that they should expect an apology and a repair. And we should, we all should, right? So if you violate a boundary of your child and you don't demonstrate repair, what you're teaching your kid is that's okay. That you, right? Like it's a we just ignore. And there's a lot of like, that's a household that I grew up in, you know? We just ignored a lot. And I didn't learn how to have a constructive argument or when I first started dating my now husband, when we would get in fights, I would get freaked out and the issue never got resolved because my nervous system became so dysregulated. Right? I think if I'd learned it was okay to be in an argument, that like the person wasn't going away, I could have tolerated the disconnection better too.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. Why do we translate this into a busy real world routine? Like school, sports, social media. Like, how do we translate, because we live in this busy, busy lifestyle. We have all these routines. How do we kind of get ourselves, situated so we're not so overwhelmed and we're able to handle it better as parents?
Well, first of all those things you said are true, right? And so, and I, and the world has too much input coming at us humans at all times. Like, so, like our brains are not wired for the level of input that we are getting, and our kids' brains certainly are not wired for it,
Oh,
right?
100%. Yes.
So, some of this as parents is recognizing when you've got too much input and doing what's in your capacity to slow it down, resist it, take it in small bites. So that's part of it. You got to manage your own stuff. And the second thing I suggest is you don't have to do all your parenting in one sitting. You don't have to have a big, huge sit down every time something happens. You can kind of, I call it drive-by parenting. Like throw your wisdom out the window and then keep on driving. And likewise, if something happens in your household and you're like, "Oh, that was a parenting moment I should have intervened at," fear not. Parenting is like standing on the banks of a lazy river. The issue will flow by again. If you missed it the first time, have grace, have patience, and sit tight because something will come up, or you can like bring it up, but like that inner tube in the lazy river will float by again. And you can handle it then. So like they live, these kids live down the hall from you. You can bring it up again. So I'd say that's a chief concern that people have is like, okay, once we get into something, we have to have it all fixed with a neat little bow on it. But that's not how humans work. That's not how families work. And that's also totally okay.
I love that. I love that. Now, when is it time to bring in a professional and what should parents look for?
If your kid is going through something and something upsetting, something, and or they're like they don't seem themselves. If their reaction to an upsetting thing is to be upset, that is not a marker of mental illness or of concern, right? As long as the tools they're using to cope with that upsetting thing are healthy life-enhancing tools, right? If they are coping with an upsetting thing with tools that are not healthy or not life-enhancing, that's a time to seek support. Likewise, if something's going on and your child's functioning has become impaired, like they're not getting the same joy that they used to get out of their activities, they're not able to do school, they're withdrawing from friends. And teenagers, this is a weird one, like withdrawing from the family, because some kids, that's part of that is normal. They seek some privacy when they get to be teenagers. But so it's severity of symptoms and impairment of functioning and or negative coping tools. Those would be the three circumstances, broadly speaking, to seek outside support.
I like that. Now, we got some emails from people, and these were some of their questions. So a teen shuts down, says, "I'm fine." What's your next line? Like, what are we supposed to say?
So this is to what I would say is, well, here's why I thought you weren't fine, because this is what I've observed. So it made me think that there was something going on that makes you not fine. So instead of just listening to their words, you state what you noticed that made you wonder how they were.
I like
That's
that.
undeniable.
Yes, that's a great answer. And another one was, homework battling. What do I do in the next 90 seconds? Like, when you're going back and forth, and it's like, what do I do now?
So if you mean if the kid's saying, I don't want to do it or I refuse to do it? Well, that one's tricky because it depends on the reason for the not want to. Do you have to go, really? Like, is it a can't or a won't? If it's a won't, you enforce the boundaries. If it's a can't, you take down barriers and you change environment, right? And so so I would that's my answer. I'd get to the bottom of it. Like, I think if someone was if a kid's going at me, I would say, what's getting in the way of you starting this right now? And I would ask not snarky. I would ask like truly, what's getting in the way? And the thing about at least teenagers and kids too is task initiation is one of those skills in the front of the brain that upgrades last. So starting non-preferred tasks is hard for young people. And that's a can't, not a won't. And so sometimes this is a conversation that you feel like you have to have on Groundhog's Day, on repeat, and you do. That's just a fact. It might not get better with one conversation or 12 or 24.
And I think that's a great answer because, you just mentioned something that sometimes I think a lot of parents miss. They think because a child shuts down and doesn't want to do something, it's because they just don't want to do it and they're being defiant. When actually, it's because they can't do it and maybe they're embarrassed to say, it's too hard for me, or I just don't understand it. It's complicated. I just don't get it.
Yeah. Or I had motivation 2 hours ago, but now I can't find it. And that's the reality of the bodies of young people, right?
For sure. Now, and another one someone wrote in, it was that my sibling blows up. How do I triage this without, taking sides?
Okay, so the first thing I would say is do not administer praise or reprimand for one sibling in front of the other. But if a child in your household has violated a family norm, you need to acknowledge that the violation has happened in front of everybody so that the kid who feels violated sees that parents is handling it and is using their power to facilitate, to create safety. And then to the sibling who caused the problem, you say, "Can I see you in the other room, please?" And then in the other room, the kid who feels violated does not need to know what's going on, because depending on what's happening, you might say in the other room, "I cannot believe you hit your sister again. We've been through this a million times." Like, you might lay into your kid, or you might say, "Are you having a bad day? What made you hit your sister?" Right? Like, how you handle it depends on what your child's needs are, right? And if they're like, "Yeah, I'm having a bad day," all this other, and then you say, "Well, you're not to do that anymore." But meanwhile, sister in the other room knows mom's talking to my brother who hit me. Fine. What mom is saying to the brother, that's between brother and mom.
I like that. I like that. Now, when your child is having a public meltdown, they asked, what matters most right now?
Well, I think it depends on the situation, because things that I think could matter would be like your kid's safety. That, of course, is all paramount. Then you've got your relationship with your child and your child's needs in the moment and the social graces of the circumstance, right? Generally speaking, you can't address all four of those things at once. You're just going to have to do your best and handle whichever seems the most in your face at the moment. And then later, when you realize which balls you've dropped, because no one can juggle them all in that case, then you're going to go make a repair or go acknowledge, like, you know what? This was happening earlier. Here's how I handled it. This is the part that didn't get addressed. Let's talk this through, right? And there may be teaching that your child needs to receive too. Like, if it's a little child and they're having a meltdown, probably that's something that your parent could have. Like, that's probably an environmental thing, unless it's a skill thing, you know, unless they should be able to regulate themselves in that situation. But usually it's like they're hungry or whatever it is. But if it's an older child who's having a meltdown, it's worth investigating what they felt the reason or the need was to have that. And they might be like, I don't know. And the answer is just like their emotional part of their brain took over and all bets were off. So I would say, don't put too fine a point on it either. Like, have some grace for yourself and your kid if that happens. Because it's hap I don't know a household where that hasn't happened.
Now, Sam, listeners were promised five concrete actions. What five things can they do this week to parent from regulation and rebuild safety?
Okay. One, take a tone of curiosity when you're talking with your children. Like, really be curious instead of judgmental, and that's hard to do. Two, I say join before you shift. So what I mean by that is, that's sit in the mud puddle before you ask your child to change in some way. And I can, you know, we can go into more depth about that, but I know we're at the end. If you're curious, you can there's more on that on my website too. From a place of relationship and safety. Three, when you are expressing concern, when you have to confront your child, confront it from using I statements. Say what you notice, say what you feel. Don't tell them you. Put it, tell them how it's making, how the issue that you are observing with them is making you feel or what you see about it. Because it's undeniable, they can't dispute that, and it is so dignifying. Four, regulate your own nervous system. Do what you need to feel whole and calm and complete. And that might mean like not doing certain things around the house because it's just not obligatory, or making sure you get exercise, prioritizing your own exercise. Like, please do not lose yourself to the needs of parenthood. You know, parent was a verb and some, I mean, was a noun, and somewhere along the lines we turned it into a verb. It used to be like a role you played, and now it's a thing you do. And there are ways to do it well, but and it's an all-consuming role, but there's also other roles that we have in our life, including being true to ourself. And that's a gift that we show our children when we take care of ourselves. We model, like, hey, you know, I'm worth it. And my whole self isn't wrapped up in you. That means you can go do your thing in this world, and I will not come apart at the seams if something, you know, if there's a rift, you know, or you're struggling. Is that four? That four. So, okay. And a fifth thing people could do today to parent differently and from a place of safety, in addition to getting curious about, oh, is focus on the good stuff. Get granular about successes. Kids need affirmations. They need to be like, the relationship is like a bank account. And when we make corrections or requests of our children, those are withdrawals from the bank account. And in order to have enough funds in the bank account to sustain those withdrawals, we have to catch them doing well. And oftentimes we withhold praise from older kids when, because we think they should already do something, but we don't do that with younger kids. Like, when children are learning to walk, we don't wait for them to run before we're like, nice job walking. right?
Exactly.
We're like, yay, you took a step. Yay, you pulled up on the coffee table. You're cruising, right? Like we give them props along the way. When your children are approaching a skill or they're approaching an internalization of a value, give them quiet, unceremonious, private props about it. And that will enhance the relationship and make your child feel seen. Also, it makes you feel good. It's a compliment.
I love that. I love that. Now, tell us about all the different services that you provide.
Sure. At Teen Savvy Coaching, I have a few different things that I do. I have a membership called the Teen Savvy Parent Hub. I mentioned that there's a sort of a coursework through there called the Parent Pathway. The first course in there is on the adolescent brain, and there's others. And that's like a low-cost monthly membership. I go live a couple of 2 to 3 times a month. There's a private discussion forum. There's a wait list for it right now on my website, but I'll be opening that in the coming months. So if people are interested, they can put themselves on the wait list. And I also offer private coaching. Discovery calls are free. You can book those on my website. And I have a podcast called Parenting Shrink Wrapped, where I co-host that with a child and adolescent psychiatrist, and we talk all things parenting. And in 2026, early 2026, I'm just in the process of cultivating speakers for the inaugural Teen Savvy Parent Summit.
Oh,
And
I love
so, yeah, if that's of interest, download something from my website, get on my mailing list so that you can know when this free event comes out, because it's going to be full of amazing speakers and concrete tidbits and tools for parents to implement right now, totally free of charge.
it. Oh, I love it. I love it. Well, this has been amazing, Sam. And tell everybody before we go where they can find you again. Just remind them.
Sure. My website is teensavvycoaching.com. You can find me on Instagram at teensavvycoaching and on Facebook at Teen Savvy Coaching with Samantha Straub, and YouTube is Teen Savvy Coaching, and I also have a Parenting Shrink Wrapped, which is the name of my podcast, YouTube channel. So any of those spots.
Love it. This has been amazing. Your information today was just unbelievable, over the top. You gave such great, tools and strategies and ideas to help parents, because it's one of the most hardest jobs to do. And, each child is different. Everyone, handles things different. And sometimes we don't know how to handle things, and we do our best, like you said. And sometimes we make mistakes, and sometimes we do a great job. But, it's great when you can lean on others, and learn from others, and be able to, learn different tools and different strategies that actually might be better for the child. And, and the best way to do that is to have support through others and through a professional like yourself. And so I'm so glad you're doing what you're doing. And I'm so glad that you came on the podcast to share all these things, because there's so many parents out there that want to do the best for their child. And sometimes they're a little lost, and they just don't know, am I doing this right? Am I saying the right things, or
Right.
am I making the situation, worse? And, to have somebody, guide you and give you tools that you didn't have before is huge. So thank you so much for what you're doing, and I appreciate you, and I appreciate everything you do.
Stacey, thank you for having me on. This conversation has been nothing but a pleasure.
Oh, same here. Same here. Thank you so much for being here. I appreciate you.
Step into 2026 with a home you can call your own. With shared ownership at Latimer Homes, you can reserve your new place for just £26 before the 26th of January. Shared ownership offers a more affordable route onto the property ladder, making your dream of owning your own home a reality. Begin your next chapter today at latimerhomes.com. T's and C's apply.